Hello again. In this episode, I'll be continuing my drug facts series with a discussion about methamphetamines. I am very fortunate to be joined by Dr. Jonathan Buchholz, Program Director of the Addictions Psychiatry Fellowship at the University of Washington and Medical Director of Inpatient Psychiatry at the VA Puget Sound. It's great to be speaking with you, Dr. Buchholz.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin. What are amphetamines, and what are some of the commonly misused substances in this class?
So amphetamines are in the class of what's called a psychostimulant, and the stimulants act on the brain by impacting what are called neurotransmitters or just chemicals in the brain. These are things like dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. And amphetamines are most commonly associated with dopamine. And what happens is that it increases the amount of dopamine in the brain, and it prevents the end organ from actually reuptaking that. So you get a ton of dopamine overstimulation in the brain. There's a lot of different kinds of amphetamines, and actually some of them are prescribed and legal. These are things like Ritalin or Adderall that are used for ADHD. But others that people can get on the street are things like methamphetamine, and those are the things that people can abuse in various ways.
Can you explain then how cocaine and methamphetamine differ in terms of their actions on the brain?
Yeah, so cocaine and methamphetamine are both stimulants. Methamphetamine, actually, what it does is it releases dopamine, and it also blocks the reuptake of dopamine from the cells. So it actually causes a tremendous amount of dopamine to enter the area of the brain that stimulates our nervous system and the areas of the brain that are associated with euphoria and energy, and can also cause things like hallucinations and insomnia. It's a little different than cocaine in that cocaine acts on the same dopamine receptors, but it prevents the reuptake of dopamine as opposed to stimulating its release and preventing the reuptake. So you can kind of think of cocaine as a stimulant that methamphetamine is sort of three times as potent as. In the studies that we have done on animal models, it really shows that methamphetamine can be somewhere on the order of about 12 times as potent as something like sex or food or those things that really stimulate the animal to keep doing a type of behavior. So that's one of the reasons why methamphetamine and cocaine are so addictive, is that from a biochemical standpoint, they're really, really rewarding, and it really hijacks those areas of the brain that are in charge of feeling good and of reward.
So what is the prevalence of methamphetamine use in the U.S., and how has it changed in recent years?
So it's increased. There's been some change over time. Somewhere around 5 million people in the United States will have tried methamphetamine at some point in their life. That's around 2%. But the large increase in methamphetamine in the United States really happened in the 1990s. And this is when methamphetamine was being produced in clandestine laboratories in rural parts of the United States, the Midwest, the West. And then really it kind of reached epidemic proportions in the early 2000s. And again, mostly in the Western and Midwestern parts of the United States. There were some regulations that changed from the federal government standpoint in terms of pseudoephedrine. So this was the kind of the base that was used to make methamphetamine in labs, and you know, kind of the Breaking Bad thing that you'll see. And when that happened, it actually changed where methamphetamine was coming from. A lot of the methamphetamine now in the United States comes from Mexico and is produced in laboratories down in Mexico as opposed to laboratories in the United States.
So can you tell us what methamphetamine looks like and what are some of its common street names?
Yeah, so methamphetamine commonly looks like a white powder. Sometimes in its crystal formulation can look like sort of rocks, ice. There's all sorts of different names for methamphetamine. And, you know, it depends on the parts of the country that you are from. A lot of times people call it meth. People call getting high, being spun. And there are a variety of different names for it, but meth is generally the name. There was actually an interesting story about the distribution of methamphetamine. One of the street names is called Crank, and that is because in the 70s, the Hell's Angels actually distributed methamphetamine up and down the West Coast, and they would hide the methamphetamine crankshaft of their motorcycles, which is where the term crank comes from.
Oh, cool. So what are some of the different ways that methamphetamine can be administered?
Commonly, people will insufflate it, meaning they'll snort it up their nose, or they will smoke it. People do sometimes inject methamphetamine, but it's most commonly taken in that sort of smoking or nasal insufflation. You can also take it as a pill or orally, but those are the most common.
So what are the risk factors for developing a methamphetamine use disorder?
So methamphetamine use disorders are, and this is common of lots of substance use disorders, are more common in folks who have underlying mental health conditions, histories of trauma in childhood, ADHD that was untreated in childhood, and then adverse childhood experiences. There are higher prevalences in folks who have underlying psychotic disorders and some overlap actually in psychosis.
And what patterns of methamphetamine misuse do we commonly see?
So people use it in a variety of different ways. So sometimes people will use methamphetamine in a binge fashion. So they'll go on a methamphetamine binge and use very frequently in high doses over the course of 3, 4, or 5 days. And then sometimes people will use it really consistently over the course of time. Very much depends on the situation, but we often see patients who end up coming into the hospital who have been on methamphetamine binges with very high doses of methamphetamine that can cause all sorts of medical issues that lead to hospitalization.
What are some of the more immediate physiological effects of methamphetamine use?
Yeah, so methamphetamine immediately causes a sense of euphoria or wellness. It increases people's heart rates and blood pressure. People can actually have insomnia where they aren't sleeping. They'll have, at times, increased in anxiety or irritability, aggression. You know, sometimes actually people, when they use too much, can become paranoid or have hallucinations. And then it can cause or exacerbate hypersexuality in some situations.
So are there any dangers associated with methamphetamine toxicity or overdose? And if so, how are these treated?
Yeah, so there actually are pretty significant risks for mortality associated with methamphetamine. So acute intoxication with methamphetamine can cause people to have a variety of cardiovascular problems. So one of the things that methamphetamine does is it's what's called a vasoconstrictor, where it reduces the size of blood vessels and it puts people at risk for things like a heart attack or stroke, aortic dissection, which is the big blood vessel that pumps the blood from your heart to the other parts of your body, can actually bulge out and people can die from that. People can have seizures And then also there's actually an increased rate of suicide with patients who have been using methamphetamine. Most commonly when people die from overdosing, if you will, it's more common to have a stroke or a heart attack or some sort of cardiovascular event.
So what are the health consequences of long-term methamphetamine use?
So there's a number of different issues. So as we discussed, you know, one of the main problems is cardiovascular problems. So people can develop what's called cardiomyopathy, or their heart becomes enlarged and doesn't pump properly. And this actually increases quite a bit in patients who use methamphetamine on a regular basis. People can have other arrhythmias or abnormal beating of the heart associated with longer-term methamphetamine use. The other thing that methamphetamine use can do is it can cause neurotoxicity. So it's really not good for the brain. So what can happen is that people can get inflammation in the brain. People can have problems with feeling over long periods of time, depression. Patients actually can develop psychosis independently with methamphetamine. And at times, even people who have stopped using methamphetamine can have continued psychotic symptoms. There was a meta-analysis done, which is a study that kind of puts together lots of different studies and showed that about 37 to 43% of patients exposed to methamphetamine actually developed methamphetamine-induced psychosis. So it can be problematic in that regard. The other thing it can do, unfortunately, it can cause a lot of problems. So, you know, the other thing it can do is cause cognitive issues. So people can have problems in memory. They can have problems in motor skills and language. The other thing that happens is people can become depressed when they are trying to stop using methamphetamine. So they can have irritability, or they can have this thing called anhedonia, where they just don't feel pleasure in doing things when they're not using methamphetamine. The other thing that you'll see is dental problems in folks who have methamphetamine use disorder. And that is both because of direct toxic effects and also because of tooth decay, dry mouth. And you'll also see people who have issues with skin picking and can have problems with dermatologic conditions.
So how long would you say after stopping methamphetamine would someone start to have withdrawal symptoms? And is withdrawal dangerous to an individual?
So withdrawal from methamphetamine in itself isn't necessarily dangerous. There isn't a known sort of death that can be associated with withdrawal like there can be with alcohol or benzodiazepines. But people feel really sluggish. They feel sometimes very dysphoric and depressed. They're often wanting to sleep a lot and eat quite a bit. This happens in folks sometime, you know, within the first day of stopping their use, and can last days and even up to a week after stopping their methamphetamine.
So can you talk a little bit about how methamphetamine is used with other substances and what are the risks that this poses?
Yeah, so the most common substance that's used in concert with methamphetamine that we're seeing that's dangerous on the street is fentanyl. And what's happening is that sometimes intentionally and sometimes really not intentionally, people use fentanyl along with methamphetamine. Some of the times these methamphetamine is being cut with fentanyl on the street and people don't even know that. Fentanyl is an opioid, a synthetic opioid, similar to heroin, except much more potent. And fentanyl is really quite lethal in an overdose situation. It causes respiratory depression and people not being able to breathe. in Washington State and in Seattle, actually, we very commonly see the most overdoses with a combination of methamphetamine and fentanyl compared to other situations like methamphetamine alone or opioids alone. And you'll see people use methamphetamine with all sorts of other substances, but the one that I worry most about is the opioids along with the methamphetamine. This used to be kind of called a speedball, where people may intentionally take both together, where they may want the euphoric effects of the opioid, but they wouldn't want to fall asleep, so they would use the methamphetamine at the same time to sort of stay awake. This is the thing that killed John Belushi back in the 70s. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, methamphetamine or any amphetamine on the street, it's very hard to know what is in those powders. Sometimes they can be not what people think they're getting.
So how is methamphetamine addiction treated? And are there any medications that are effective in this?
Yeah, so methamphetamine, unlike opioids and alcohol, unfortunately doesn't have a great sort of magic bullet medication. We've tried a lot of different kinds of medication, and there's been many different studies trying to look at what medicines might be helpful. The most recent study that had some promise showed a combination of bupropion, which is an antidepressant, along with naltrexone, which is an opioid blocker that we use for alcohol and opioid use disorder. And it had some success, but actually the main treatment that we have with the most evidence for the treatment of methamphetamine use is something called contingency management. And contingency management is the idea that we try to reward positive behaviors in folks who have substance use disorder by giving some incentive with the idea that we reward the behaviors we're looking for. So for instance, if someone was in treatment for methamphetamine use and they had a negative urine and were clean for, you know, a couple of sessions in a row, we may give them a voucher or a fast food restaurant or something like that in order to reward the positive behavior. And that is really the most successful treatment that we have at this point, along with cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah, great. So finally, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, you know, methamphetamine and fentanyl are you know, really quite common in the Western United States right now. Fentanyl has been around for quite some time, but really reaching the Western United States more frequently these days. I would say that the things to keep in mind about methamphetamine is when it's taken appropriately for ADHD, not the street form, it's actually a very good treatment for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and is actually a really good medication to prevent people from using as adults if they do have ADHD as children. And the other aspect is also that contingency management sometimes is sort of given this bad name of, you know, we're paying people to not use drugs. And really the idea is that we're trying to help people get some initial sobriety so that they can engage in treatment long term. And one of the studies that Nora Volkoff did, who is head of the NIH and one of the people who is quite familiar with this topic, showed that the brain takes about a year to really heal after using methamphetamine, and sometimes up to 18 months. So we really want to try to get people into treatment and help them through that first year. And contingency management is a great option for that.
Yeah. I really appreciate you joining us today to share your expertise on methamphetamine use. And I hope we can speak to you again in the future.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Have a good day.